the grade cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Great Cricketer Podcast. On today's show, Australia win their T20 series against Pakistan without 90% of the team getting a hit. We'll look ahead to the Australia A game in Perth for the annual bash off this time under lights. We'll talk about Mohammad Irfan barehanding a seagull on a cruise in Dubai and other completely normal sentences. It happened again. England beat New Zealand in a super over to win the series 3-2 with just about everyone laughing in the final over, including Jimmy Neesham. We've got India and Bangladesh, Graham Smith in South Africa, Pat Howard and the Wallabies, and just about everything in between. All of that before we answer your terrific, terrific questions this week and scenarios this week in hashtag AskTGC. Of course, none of this would happen without our good friends at Budgie Smuggler, who make this show entirely possible. And them giving us money means that we can all be in the same room. So it would mean a lot to us if you smugglers and smugglets out there supported them the way they've supported us for a couple of years now. Use the code CHAMP at checkout for the month of November to get 10% off your next order. More about budgiesmuggler.com.au later in today's show. My name is Ian Higgins and I'm joined by Dave Edwards to my left and Sam Perry to my right. And yet again, Australia, the greatest team to have ever played the game of cricket, boys. So what are we going to complain about?
Why are you standing up with your shirt off? That's a very energetic intro.
And gesticulating wildly.
Very good.
Helps. Helps the listeners.
Well, yeah. He goes, I'm glad you reminded me and the listeners of what just happened in this last week, because I want to posit to the group.
Posit, please.
From November 1, or even just beforehand, maybe late October, when the Sri Lanka series started, I think it was Sri Lanka who came out.
I think so.
We're talking about Australian T20s. Have we just witnessed the most forgettable cricket, international cricket, ever played on these shores?
Hard to say, because other examples I've already forgotten.
Correct. That's right. It's a paradoxical question. But
I think so. I mean, I don't know whether it's my own early onset amnesia, which I constantly think about and concerned about. But I don't recall any of the specifics for any of these matches.
I only remember the last two series in pictures. Yep. And the only picture in my head is Steve Smith grimacing as he plays another strange shot that people still feel uneasy about, even though he has a wonderful technique. Yeah. But we just don't have the language to describe it yet. We are entering the era of eminently forgettable cricket. This is where always on culture, always on digitization, is melding with what we're seeing in the digital world, and we're creating a complete loss of memory. And I want to say, you might think, oh, is this bad? No.
Yeah, you're pro it.
Is it good? We're always just looking forward. Who cares? I went on the CA app to find out what happened in that series. It's very difficult to get to what happened beforehand. It's always upcoming. It's always just what's ahead.
What's next?
And that's why, and we're going to talk about selections and stuff later, that's why it doesn't fucking matter that Khawaja averaged 50 for the last couple of years in Australia. It's all about who last scored 100, who's going to score runs in the bat-off. Recency bias is the only memory we give a fuck about here, and that's why Bryce Street should open the batting for Australia. 100 for Queensland, and he's young and he's new.
It's a form of memory erasure, isn't it? It's almost like the movie Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah, exactly.
Where they're erasing those memories clinically. They're not doing that to us, but they should be doing it to us, because that's ultimately end product. I don't remember a fucking thing about what's happened
exactly
over the past 20 years.
But maybe this is the masterstroke from CA and the ICC, etc. Like, cricket is just sort of melding into one thing that happened. You just remember the odd picture here and there, and the rest doesn't really matter anymore.
There's a comforting familiarity about that. And it's kind of like when the 90s you were watching Hey Hey It's Saturday, for example, a variety show. T20 is a variety show, isn't it? There's Pluck a Duck, there's Red Faces, all the things that happen that you kind of feel good about. But you wake up on Sunday morning, you don't remember what Red Simon said. You just let it wash over you. That's what cricket is to me now.
That's right. There was a gong. Someone said something racist. Harry Connick going to call it out. You know,
some energetic voiceover work.
That's
From whoever the guy was, John Blackman, Howie in cricket.
Rod Hogg tweeted, and, you know, so be it.
So are we Jim Carrey? We're Jim Carrey in Eternal Spotless Mind.
Yeah.
We the audience. Yeah, well, they played that second game, which seemed like about 4 years ago, in Canberra. Largely forgettable. I think Pakistan got about 150. Then Steve Smith just played one of the more enjoyable innings I've seen Steve Smith play for mine.
Really?
So, yeah, because, like, a lot of people say, you know, that, like, they don't enjoy watching Steve Smith bat. in the test match form, and that's fine, you know, whatever. But like watching him execute those balls through the offside field with like complete precision, including the expansive cover drive, lofted cover drive, and the last ball of, I think it was Mohammed Amir's over, yeah.
Good memory.
Just so good. It was good to watch.
But is it a different type of enjoyment that you get from Steve Smith as opposed to like a Darcy Short or a Chris Lynn?
Yep.
That enjoyment is a different type of enjoyment. Mm. It's bolder, it's bigger.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe the way that you enjoy Steve Smith?
The way
it's a cerebral cultured enjoyment is what I think.
Yes. Because like when you're watching
it's a
like
two hat Michelin star restaurant.
Yeah.
So it's a degustation meal. Yeah. Seven courses brought over the space of 3 hours.
Paired. You're not answering this question, by the
way. No. This is a vehicle for you guys to tell me what you feel.
Abstract metaphors.
Yeah, but like because when you're watching the power hitters, it's just like it's just
Meat and veg.
Stable base swing.
Exactly, yeah. Whereas, like, kind of Steve Smith is more like the game changers vegan plant-based diet. Yeah.
Ah, very good. I like it.
Okay. He's an elaborate restaurant that you go to with your wife. Yeah. And you know, I'm going to go here for 3 hours and enjoy the experience. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some beautiful music playing. Maybe a violinist comes over to the table. Nice. And you just let it, you know, happen.
Yeah, whereas Glenn Maxwell is just boys. That's just a steakhouse.
Mm. So, some of the
sizzler.
Some of the meals will be challenging when you watch Steve Smith bat. You know, some of them will actually challenge the palate. Yeah. And that's why you need to match that wine very nicely with Finch at the other end. Someone hit a fucking six. I need a beer with this.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I went to a restaurant in Byron Bay recently where there was actually an in-house forager.
Yes.
So someone actually goes out there and brings back strange things that they've found in the forest or in the gardens
really?
And puts it on the plate.
Yes.
And explains that to you. I think that's what a Steve Smith innings is.
Right, yeah. Real hunter-gatherer.
It's foraged.
Yeah.
There's a restaurant called Attica in Melbourne where the maitre d' takes you out after the main course or before the main course and asks you to pick from their garden.
Yeah.
And then they use what you've picked from the garden, like the herbs and stuff, to add to your dessert, etc. Yeah. I mean, and now I've always said Steve Smith's inside-out cover drive is exactly like that
experience. You've always said that.
Anyway, yeah, batted well. Then they play the game in Perth, and that was the most forgettable. They rolled Pakistan for 100, Australia 10-wicket win. The only story there probably is that, like, Dave Warner, he is back. We sort of posed the question last week, is he back or he's back? Mm. He's been out once this series. No one else has had a hit. Really enjoy watching Alex Carey go about his business this summer. So let me put it to you guys. With, like, all of these matches are sort of alluding to the World Cup next year. We're trying to find as much information as we can. I don't think we've learned anything from this series because, like, McDermott replaced Maxwell, he batted four, didn't look fantastic. So, like, is Australia's tactic to just bowl better than the opposition and then just hope the top three batsmen, Smith, Warner and Finch, just get the runs?
This series did nothing to detract, I think, from, like, the theory that Australia is trying to rebuild the Death Star and, like, it was just a total reinforcement of all cricketing stereotypes. Not only did Australia win by, you know, fast thunderbolts at the heads of ill-prepared subcontinental batsmen.
Why are you shivering? Why is your body contorting?
So speaking vibrato, but you know, there was muscular hitting. There was Pakistani no-name Quicksu came in and bowled 147 k's per hour. The less we know about them, the better. Mm-hmm. Frankly, you know, like it's like Australia's just like rebuilding the Titanic. You know, like Clive Palmer. But will she sail? We don't know.
We're pouring $50 billion into this Death Star.
Exactly.
So are you foreseeing that another sinking is on the horizon? Is that what you're saying? That all this repackaging is actually just the same model and it's been pushed out there again and it will fail again?
Well, it does feed into a couple of other things, you know, like Steve Smith came out earlier this week, right? Mm-hmm. Speaking about captaincy, you know, because that's another big thing through the summer with Steve Smith be the captain again. And he said, there's a really interesting column from Tim Lane about this. Like they asked Steve Smith, like, oh, do you think you'll still be able to bat as well as you can if you're captain? He goes, well, actually, my performance is better when I'm captain. And it's kind of like, that wasn't really the point though, was it, Steve? You know what I mean? Like, your runs were never in question with captaincy, were they? But I just wonder if a bit of PR groundwork is being laid and you're like, Steve, that was a very ill-advised comment. Have you learned? Like, the captaincy is not about your runs on the field. It's about the other stuff. But that's why I'm saying, like, it's...
No, but
is
in
it just
Australia,
another...
runs as captain is the most important thing, much more important than the actual strategy you exemplify as a captain.
Don't get me wrong. You know, the right people are in his corner. Heavy intellects like Mark Waugh and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm just saying, like, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Rodney Hogg made a really good comment.
Always.
on Twitter this week around the T20 series, where he did say, you know, like six games completed international summer for CA summer. And unfortunately, the man, Alex Carey, who dominated the World Cup, just sat on his bum whilst we batted. Good point, Rod. Right. And then Greg Matthews responded, "How did we go in those matches, Rodney?" And then Hogg said, "One very, very easily, Gregory."
And then some lowercase guy came and said, "Okay, Boomer."
Yeah.
Which is basically the champ of the non-cricket world, isn't it? Okay,
yeah,
Boomer.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know, man. There's a really good cast podcast in Rod Hogg, Greg Matthews, and maybe, I don't know, Kate McGregor or something, some Sky After Dark cricket shit. We should start that network. That's a good network.
Just the whole summer I've been thinking about, you know, how can we get more runs out of Steve Smith? And I think captaincy might be the answer. We need more runs coming from four for the Australian cricket team.
Rod also just said, by the way, give Greta a canoe to get to Spain. And then retweeted some criticism of a mural someone painted of us. That's all good.
Lots of good points. Lots of good points. Okay, so Pakistan are still number one. They're still number one team in the world in T20s. Australia now second. Those rankings obviously mean everything to everyone. I just kind of reminded of what Russell Arnold said to us a couple of weeks ago on the show, and just like your scoring options for subcontinental players are so different because of the way the ball bounces in Australia. And just looking at how Pakistan batted in the last like three overs of the game, particularly in Perth, which as we know is a very bouncy wicket, even the new Optus Stadium. I think Optus is a drop-in, isn't it? Is that right, Piers? Is Optus a drop-in? Yeah, so drop-in from the Wacker Nets.
I like how you didn't ask me that.
Yeah.
I'm searching for a fact, Piers. Yeah.
And like,
but it was using like organic, you know, Perth Wacker soil sort of thing.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or whatever the AFL tells them to do, basically.
Sure, yeah, exactly, yeah.
And Gina Reinhart was involved in the excavation of that soil. That's all I know.
Perfect.
It's good soil there.
Perfect. And the way Pakistan couldn't lay bat on ball because the ball was just bouncing about 30 centimetres higher than what they were used to, being able to score off the hip and stuff. It's just like, this is just, it's kryptonite to them. In the same way that the swinging ball for Australian batsmen in the UK is...
Well, cricket is just about geology, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's just our soil and conditions are different to your soil and conditions, and then you're not used to these conditions, and that's why we'll beat you. Mm-hmm. That's why no one wins, you know, away from home anymore.
Mm. Let's forget about the past, boys.
Mm-hmm. And
let's talk about the future. And the future is Australia A.
Yes.
Australia A play against Pakistan in a three-day night game starting this afternoon. This is being recorded Monday morning. Dan Bredig, as you said before the show, Pez, Dan Bredig has called this the sixth test match of the summer.
I noted that KO and CA then picked up upon and said pundits are calling it the sixth test of the summer. It's good shit.
So this match is being televised, is it?
Yeah, and can I just say, we'll wrap people over the knuckles in a smug, barely researched way often, but I think the return of pixelated, poorly broadcast cricket is good.
Yep.
And I think a lot of cricket fans, hardcore cricket fans, think the game's been taken away from them a lot. Too much T20, not enough meat and veg cricket. But through CA's digital stuff, through KO doing these three-day three-day cricket with probably a single camera, I'm heavily into that.
You do get a lot, don't you? But normally these tour matches are behind closed doors. I remember just before the Ashes series, Australia was playing in a warm-up game or some shit. I desperately wanted to watch it, but it was really almost impossible. They'd almost deprived you deliberately of that footage, and you had to ascertain through Twitter updates or grainy fucking camera phone footage that was probably banned. I think, you know, the fact that we now can be privy to this match, you know, obviously throws up a lot of new storylines for us to deduct, doesn't it?
Exactly.
In a summer where we need narratives.
Exactly. And there was a lot of, and just on this paywall thing, he goes, obviously it's a big talking point that the first internationals of the summer were behind a paywall. Now, far be it from us to comment, you know, on that kind of stuff, allied to various broadcasters, etc.
But
I think it's a masterstroke from CA to put those fucking matches behind a wall because there was about 2,000 people there and Australia won in about 2 minutes.
Yeah, I've been looking at the cricket sort of in the Southern Hemisphere. I'm talking specifically the games in Australia, then also the New Zealand-England series. More people listen to this podcast combined than every single one of those matches that have ever turned out in this summer so far. So, no one really cares.
It's in 4K, though.
In 4K.
And 4K's coming for us.
Yeah, for this podcast. Okay, so there's basically two batting spots, right, for the Australians to be picked for the first test in the Gabba. I'll run you through the Australia A squad. It's Alex Carey captaining. You got Marcus Harris, Joe Burns, Khawaja, Pekowski, Travis Head, Bancroft, Nisa, Jai Richardson, Sean Abbott and Riley Meredith is the team. So there's two spots, because in the test side, you probably think, well, Warner, Smith, Marnus, Labuschagne, Wade and Payne. That's five of the top seven. So there's two spots. There's an opener and someone going to bat five.
Yep.
Yeah. So who have you got? Who have you got?
Well, like, as in who would I pick? Or who do I think they will pick?
Who do you think they'll pick?
I think that they will pick Harris to open the batting with Warner. I think they'll do that because they might feel like Khawaja hasn't delivered. You know, it's a bit of what have you done for me lately for Khawaja?
Yeah.
And I think I do feel sorry for Joe Burns deeply. He's a lovely right-handed batsman with a very Australian traditional technique. He's got nice tanned forearms, a fantastic mane of hair that can come out the back of a helmet. He's from Queensland. He's got a real Pete Murray 2003 vibe. He can probably play rugby union, etc. I see the allure of Pete, but Harris, as friend of the show Ed Cowan said the other day, he's, you know, WA background, probably scored the most runs as an opener. Give him the summer. It's all about what this test team is building for, though. What is cricket for this summer? Mm-hmm. There's no Ashes. There's no India tour on the horizon. Mm. This is just cricket for cricket's sake.
Mm.
I think if it's just like, if we want to run demolition summer, stabilise, forget about Cape Town, let's just have runs and montages and good music, it's Khawaja. He averages 50. Like, there's, you know, like, past success is predictor of future success. It should be Khawaja. It'll probably be Harris. But I think if you're going to go Harris, then, you know, then who's the middle order batsman? And do you guys want to get to your openers first?
Well, I'll just say that. So let me put it to you, Edo. So Pez has gone for Harris there. Let's say Khawaja and Joe Burns get hundreds, and Harris gets 70. Who gets picked?
Yeah, weight it up.
Ooh, that's a very good question. an opener 70 for the incumbent.
Yeah, he's the incumbent, isn't he?
I'm thinking of the three, he is the incumbent, isn't he?
Yeah,
well, the incumbent who averaged 9 in England.
Incumbency is so important in Australian society in general.
Yes,
and you know, everywhere, not just cricket.
Mm-hmm.
If you were there at first, you get it. So you have to really do a lot to displace the person who's ahead of you in terms of the incumbent. So I don't know if 100 beats 70 in that context. A big 100, a daddy 100.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we're talking 150 plus 200, not, then that might swing the pendulum a little bit. But I think 70 for Harris would get him in.
Yep.
Based on the current
versus
climate.
200s, yeah.
Yeah.
I reckon you're probably right. I think Khawaja's really far behind the eight. He hasn't started the Shield season very well.
But in terms of the middle order, I'm hoping that Pukowski gets a go.
Yeah, me too.
Because we need a young person that we can pin all our hopes and dreams on.
Well, I agree with that. But I actually think that the Australian cricket selectors think that person is Travis Head, who's only in his early 20s. He's got captaincy material about him. He's vice-captain of this team.
But does he excite you?
No.
The way that a Pukowski excites you for what could be the future?
Hmm. No, he doesn't. We
need to be excited. What would excite? What's an exciting selection?
In terms of like heavyweight.
Selectors always need to have one exciting selection to galvanise us as a nation state.
That's why I think it needs to be, if there's two batting spots, go Khawaja for run demolition summer. Probable runs at the top of the order, and he also opens the batting extremely well. And then balance that with Pukowski, who out of Head versus Pukowski for excitement narrative heavyweight battles, Pukowski is the one who's most exciting.
Yeah.
You know, he's newer, he's fresher, younger,
yeah,
probably better hair.
Yeah.
You know. So that's how I'd balance that up. I mean, we know what's going to happen, though, and I tweeted this yesterday. You know that the highest score after the top score will be 36 and the top score will be Cameron Bancroft, 82. And it will be gritty and it will be done at night and people say, gee, he's mature and he also does yoga. And he'll get in and he's Langer's mate. And that's okay because Cameron Bancroft's funny and I'd be fine for that.
We've just listed like 86 storylines there. Like, we're talking about how this is a contextless summer. There's a lot of fucking rich narratives to draw from there.
Rich.
Creamy narratives.
I've got to say, one of the narratives I'm taking away is one of the hard luck stories of this summer, and Sean Marsh not being selected for the Australia side. He averaged 102 in the Shield season so far.
Has he been put out to pasture because of age? He's born in 1983.
Well, he hasn't been put out yet. They haven't picked the side yet. He could still say yes, Marsh.
He's a lock. He's actually six spots locked.
Older employees can still bring value to organisations. You know, greater experience, you know, a different generational viewpoint, old school work ethic.
Okay.
I don't know if he has any of those things, but
Just saying they can do that.
I'm just saying they can do that.
So we should note as well that Nick Maddison was selected. He's had a fantastic start to the Shield season so far. He's actually stepped out of the A squad due to mental health reasons. So we wish him all the best in his recovery, along with Glenn Maxwell as well. So Cameron Green. Let's talk about the future. Cameron Green.
Yep.
Oh, let's talk about it.
Okay.
Came in at 7.53 for WA in the second inning. Scored 120 and saved the game from number 9. It was his first class 100. His quote after the game, it was nice to give my dad a call at the end of the day and tell him how I went. I was pretty emotional speaking to dad. I've spent a lot of time with him down all the cricket nets when no one's watching. So three separate news outlets in Australia went with a form of headline that read, Echoes of Flintoff in Gifted Green. Mm. Why are we still looking for Flintoff 05, for fuck's sake?
Well, this came from Langer as well. So like, it just goes to show, like, that's just that ghost lingers so hard. It's the greatest compliment you can give to an opposing player. We are still trying to find that golden side built around like Flintoff Mark II. And
even in this era of T20 compartmentalization of skill sets, where you can, you know, be selected based on your ability to bowl a dot ball, we still need that all-in-one, off-the-shelf, white-label product who can fulfill all our hopes and dreams as a single software as a solution.
It's a promised land for Cameron Green, really. Like, does it get much better than the dual glory of a nice call to dad after cricket and comparisons to Flintoff? Yeah. I'm not sure that a career could commence any better than that. I mean, he has debuted before this, but, I mean, that's pretty amazing. Notwithstanding the fact that Australia's all-rounder needs, like, we're actually looking for a number 6 who can bat first and bowl second, but still, it just, once you just go, oh, well, he's tall, so he bowls first, and he did well, so he's Flintoff.
But also the visceral domination of, you know, bringing a team back from essentially the brink. They were 7 for 40 or something and hitting 109 and being tall and blonde. I mean, viscerally and evocatively, you look at that and you're like, you are Andrew Flintoff and it's 2005 again and I feel safe.
And you're now on our side.
You're a marketer's dream. I like that he did mention how, you know, when you're a young bloke or boy or girl, you go down to the nets with your dad. And it is such a relatable experience because cricket is such a parent-child sport, isn't it? Like, it is extremely relatable, his, you know, story about going down to the nets with your dad and him giving endless throwdowns and he's a junior player of promise, and then he gets a little bit older and maybe his dad's mediums don't worry him as much anymore, and, you know, he sees him growing up, and, you know, when the sun sets over the net, and, you know, it's like Mufasa with Simba in The Lion King, says one day this kingdom will be yours. And it's a beautiful bonding moment between father and son that we can all relate to.
I feel like both of your dads were quite good at cricket. Like, they could, like, send down some okay deliveries to you when you were a child. That'd be fair to say?
I think it'd be fair to say.
Because my dad wasn't. My dad, hopelessly uncoordinated. He just couldn't. So, it, you know, frustrated.
Couldn't land him.
He couldn't land him. Couldn't land him.
Did he? Did your dad have to bowl from the mark, or did you get him to come forward and throw down from like halfway?
Yeah, from halfway. And there was like no pace in them, so you know, I find it very hard to work the ball at the age of 4. Yeah.
And when did you? Because obviously this has stayed with you. Like, when did you start to lament the idea that your dad was uncoordinated?
I don't really remember, but you know, it's obviously something I think about most days. But yeah, it's just like there's almost no. I didn't have that shared experience with my dad because it was just like, oh, don't worry about it, Dad.
Did you have an alpha uncle who could step in as a kind of surrogate father figure?
No, not at all. No one in my family is really very sporty. But like, I can think of another time when I was being looked after by my grandparents, and my granddad took me down to a wicket which was right near his house, and we went out for like a centre wicket, and he just like bowled the ball to me.
Two person centre wicket.
Yeah, I would have been like maybe 6 or 7.
Yeah, wow. Took my bat down there with granddad.
Yep. He rolls out a ball, and I've just absolutely bombed it. And like made him like walk and go and get the ball. Why did I do that? Really mad. Yeah. All right, let's talk about New Zealand and England. They play the fifth game. The fifth game the other day. It's straight to the fifth game.
Yeah.
England are chasing. It's happened exactly again. Jimmy Nation's behind the last over, the 16 to win. Chris Jordan hits a 4 off the last ball. They send it to a super over. It couldn't happen again. But the whole over that Jimmy Nation's bowling, everyone's laughing. It's just like, oh, it can't be happening again. But like it's almost poignant how irrelevant this cricket is, that people are just like, bit of banter. It doesn't really matter who wins the series. No one really cares. It's just happening again.
Yeah.
Pez, you watched the game, didn't you?
Yeah, I watched it.
It's like a shit sequel, isn't it? It was like Rocky, where Ivan Drago, Rocky IV comes out. Oh no, what was it? The recent one, Creed, where Creed is fighting. It felt very
like Anchorman 2 and like Zoolander 2. It's just a money making.
Grease 2.
Mm. Grease 2.
Yeah.
Just a money making shit.
Lost a lot of the box office.
Still watch it though.
Yeah.
Still watched it, obviously. I don't know. Yeah. I did watch it. But the first thought I had was like, and I know this is said before, but like Eden Park is a comically small ground. It was stupidly small. Yeah. Like they chased 147 in 11 overs.
Yeah.
And they were sort of struggling early, England. Mm. They were like 3 for 39 from, you know, from memory. It was a good moment early, before it all started getting very dramatic, when Johnny Bairstow, who'd played well onto that point, just standing there slapping Ish Sodhi over his head for six, just like a base, like baseball.
Yeah.
He nicked off behind, and very, very audible over the sound mic was someone just going, fuck off!
Yeah.
We started getting all these messages from people going, Tom Seifert was the keeper. Yeah. I was just telling Bairstow to fuck off. Yeah. Or Jimmy Neesham is like, that was Bairstow.
That was Bairstow.
And it was great. Because you could see off. Neesham laughing, and Bairstow sent himself off. And I just want to say to Danny Rubin, the ECB media manager, we are coming again for Johnny. We have a 100th show coming up.
Yeah, the 100th show coming up.
In a couple of weeks. And we would like Johnny to be part of it. And we're not in the practice of publicly starting public campaigns for stuff.
But here we are.
And here we are. It's funny either way, because we'll get Alfred, which has already happened 6 or 7 times from the ACB. But we would like Johnny to come on the show for the 100th show, because we love Johnny Bairstow.
Okay, so England take that series 3-2. In the fourth game, Dawid Malan scored 100, and also Matt Parkinson, who actually played great cricket a couple of seasons ago. He's actually bowling with Mason Crane at the same club at Gordon, at my old club.
The Highlanders, I guess there's a British thing there, yeah.
Scottish, I think.
A bit of actual grade cricket news in the grade cricket podcast.
Yeah, it's weird. Don't like it. So there's a story came out the other day that the fourth umpire in the third T20, his name's Garth Stewart, he's 51. He's previously worked as a porn star in both print and film.
Print.
So I guess when you used to sort of print them out 20, 30 years ago, French did that. I didn't do it. But yeah.
No, magazines.
So, okay, well, I guess we'll try and unpack this. I mean, what's going on with umpires? Like, I thought they were just meant to be like gentle granddads or blokes that work in IT.
That's what I'm thinking, Dave. Yeah, because like I always think about like what do umpires do in the winter? Like, presumably they're just driving Ubers or something.
Yeah.
But like for like an umpire to make it to the professional realm.
Yeah.
And he's previously worked in the adult film industry. That's quite surprising.
Change of pace, but
I guess
it's a change of
international
pace.
Umpires are getting increasingly alpha, though, aren't they?
And virile.
I mean, there's a lot of ex-players across codes that are moving into being officials, on-field officials. You see it in the rugby league. The referees are getting bigger and the chests are bigger and their salads are better. That's something that's happened along with professional sport. The umpires are also trying to work on their own physics and the like.
Are you thinking like a Joel Wilson? Very virile, man.
I was just thinking, like the other day... I happened to go down to the North Sydney like cricket club's like old boys day last Sunday. They played a T20 doubleheader and walked in, and they lost both games. Commiserations. And at one point, just at the end of the game, a huge umpire just walked, like there was a rain delay, walked past the North's players who were sitting in the stands, and one of them like backslapped the state player for the North side. I was like, I don't recognize that face. Really beautiful looking man. And I said to the people, I was like, who's that guy? He's like, Mitch Clayton. I'm like, Mitch Clayton's umpiring. He's in a full umpiring garb for a first grade match. I'm like, Mitch Clayton. And for listeners out there, Mitch Clayton is literally a current county cricketer with Sussex, like playing under Jason Gillespie. He's like a storied first grade career and also a storied first class career. Very fast. Used to be very fast bowler, fast medium now. But he's literally a current professional player who's decided after the English summer to come back an umpire grade cricket here. So he's, and like he look, I mean, and with respect to Mitchell, looks like a porn star still.
Right, really?
Like, yeah, good looking face. But like probably a bit stockier than he used to be, but still pretty like good thick, limbs, good
thick through the trunk.
There's good facilities around the entire rig.
Good facilities. You know?
And
good
it facilities. Was actually quite, not only is it strange to see a county player umpiring, current county player, but he had like wonderful white teeth and tanned face.
And a really good relationship with the players. And the players seem to be appreciating
he did it well. I mean, this is a current county player. The state player is probably looking up to the county guy, which is very rare for state players to show any respect to umpires in any sort of authentic way.
It would be quite off-putting when you take a wicket and then you lob the ball to the umpire gently and he just catches it one hand easily as opposed to, you know,
or he just ejaculates on it. Just on cue. No preparation.
Oh, I did not see that coming.
Sponsor us.
All right, Graeme Smith is in line to be the first director of cricket for the South African Cricket Board, a position that's been created in the aftermath of the 2019 World Cup exit. Was obviously disastrous for South Africa. So this follows the same model that England have, where Andrew Strauss has done it previously, you know, Ashley Giles, and they oversee all levels of pro cricket in the country. Obviously, you know, Pat Howard had a very similar role. Pat Howard now looking after what happened to the Wallabies in the World Cup.
I mean, I just love this, like Pat Howard. Okay, he's from rugby, so I'll probably give him a break. Also, a lot of people are like, I mean, you know, like don't like kick him. He's down. He's gone from cricket, right? Mm-hmm. And he's gone back to rugby. He's from rugby. Mm-hmm. A lot of people said he's a pretty decent bloke anyway, but he's out of here. What I love is just this review market. Mm. I just love the fucking market for reviews after anything goes wrong in professional sport. There's so many of them. Mm. Like cricket had the Argus review, and then they had the
which
culture
is when
crisis.
Pat Howard actually came in. That's off right. The back of the Argus.
The back of mm-hmm. so he was born from a review, and then he oversaw two reviews: the culture review, which got rid of him and throw him onto another review. But that culture review had the Longstaff review, and then it had another review on top of that from players. And now he's onto the Wallabies review. Like, I just think we've got to get into this market massively.
Well, there's so many reviews going on outside of sport as well. You've got the, you know, there's like 16 royal commissions going on consecutively. Right. And there's obviously Labor is now looking at their result in the recent federal election, doing a review into that. So we're just fucking navel-gazing, aren't we? We don't know what's going on.
I don't know. It's sort of like slick PowerPoint, strong management speak, get some AFL consultants in. It's just a good grift, I think.
Pat Howard, I mean, he became a meme, didn't he? Like towards the end of his, he now is a meme. Like,
and it's meme-ified.
Once you are a meme, it's very hard to un-memeify yourself.
Well, you must go back into an enclosed bubble where no one else knows what else is going on around it. Yeah. And rugby union is the best example of that.
Well, I mean, like Shane Watson, for example, you know, great cricketer and the rest of it, but but he became an absolute meme towards the end of his career. The Water review gags. And I saw a few weeks ago his Insta got hacked.
Yeah,
and if you just scroll through the comments of that, it's just, want to review that, mate? You're going to review that?
Yeah, it's
like 68,000 blokes just saying, you're going to review that? It's just a photo of a porn star or something, or a naked woman. Might want to review that, mate. Anyone want to pick this up?
Well, tell you who doesn't review. Joel Wilson. And we thank the Joel Wilson Institute, as suggested by Tim Bresnan. All right, Adam Zampa's on the show. And after that, hashtag ICGC.
That is very good. The swing works, the Oracle again. Quite brilliant from Simon Jones.
What a great piece of reverse swing. He got 6 for 53 in the first innings. And he did it with reverse swing, getting it to go both ways. This one has come back sharply. Well outside off stump there, but not there. That's some piece of bowling, I can tell you. It's 263%.
We're just going to take a moment in today's show to talk to you about Blinkist. Blinkist is an app that allows you to get the key ideas from best-selling non-fiction books from experts in the form of bite-sized text and audio. You get all the key ideas from these books in 15 minutes or less in text or audio. From award-winning titles by experts who have conferred with the author to make sure everything is spot on. It's an absolute time saver. You can consume it anywhere you want on the go. The topics in the library include sex and relationships, religion, science, parenting, motivation, inspiration, a whole bunch more. There's already 3,000 books in there, yet 40 new titles added every single month. There's already 12 million people worldwide who are using Blinkist. You can just find that on the App Store or wherever else you get your apps. And Blinkist have an exclusive deal for you guys and girls out there for listening to the Grey Cricketer podcast. If you go to blinkist.com/cricket, you start a 7-day free trial. So go and check it out. That's blinkist.com/cricket, or go and find it in the App Store. And that's thanks to Blinkist.
Well, look, I'm not going to do the normal intro with the stats and the numbers and stuff. This guy's been on the show beforehand. We know him as Australia's premier short form spinner. On his Instagram, though, he describes himself as a flat earther, vegan, influenza. He refers to his darling hat rat with a sideways heart, which means love, friendship, and a 35mm camera and lots of pictures of Shoreditch. I'm, of course, talking about Adam Zorba Zampa. Zorba, welcome back to the Grade Cricketer.
Thanks, man. Didn't know if I was going to get the recall, but I'm glad you guys have got me back on.
Can you just, it was one of the most requested guests, actually, but can you just tell us where you are at the moment, Adam?
I am currently, I've just walked off the pitch 2 days after landing from Perth, just giving back to Grade Cricket. I'm playing like a second 11 game with the Darren Lehman Academy, and I've just walked off the field now. So sitting at Karen Rolton Oval watching the Darren Lehman Academy boys warm up to bat.
Just on that, you have just completed a clean sweep of like an international T20 series where you played a pivotal role and surrounded by some of the game's greats, and you're obviously, you know, very highly regarded in your own right. What's it like just going from that context to a second 11 game? Is cricket really just the same and the same blokes talking about the same stuff?
We're all the same character, but yeah, just at different levels. Like all these Darren Lehman Academy boys, they're mostly English club cricketers coming over to Adelaide to play some club cricket and train for the summer. So they're pretty typical English blokes, like not a word said in the field, just like arguing with each other, spraying each other. Pretty much just like being at international cricket again.
Are you outdoors? I thought I heard a rush of wind there. Are you kind of, is there a change room, or are you kind of in the change room and there's 10 blokes huddled around you, eager, you know, listening?
I'm outside the change room at the moment.
On? I thought I heard some spikes on the concrete there.
There is some spikes around. I'm actually just sitting down with Hut Rat at the moment, sideways, love Hut.
Oh, nice.
She knew that there would be absolutely no vegan options here for me today, so she brought me some salad.
Oh, that's nice. Not to be confused with your salad, which we'll talk about later. I think one of the questions a lot of people want asked, Zorba, is based on your last interview with us where you said quite explicitly, maybe facetiously, I hate grade cricket, and it was Socrates who said, from the deepest desires often comes the deadliest hate. So presumably you have some very big grade cricket goals this year, and do you still check Sutherland's cricket scores?
I'm past that now as well. That's how much I dislike it. If Watto's playing, then I might check their scores, but other than that now, I think the last time I did the podcast, I said that I might, every time I'm playing grade grandma, try and see who's got the bye and try and get a clearance for that weekend to the team who has the bye. And I think there's a couple of weekends coming up soon where I might have to play grade cricket. So I think it's going to be the same theory for me.
We'll just skip straight ahead to the international stuff, Zorbs, and we'll talk about Sri Lanka and Pakistan. And I want to know at what point you guys realised that they weren't very good. Quite early at the toss.
You can't really comment on that because I know it's a pretty good feeling at the moment. Obviously, after a clean sweep and winning does make the change room a lot better. But I think it was 2 years ago Sri Lanka came to Australia and we fielded probably our A team because there was a test tour at the time and they dusted us in Australia. And then I think if you go back 12 months we played Pakistan in Dubai and Abu Dhabi and they dusted us 3-0 there as well. So the conditions do play a big part. Obviously, our strength is playing on our own wickets and our weakness in the past has been a little bit overseas. So I don't want to say too much, but we were pretty dominant in the last 2 series.
We'll come back to some serious stuff, but I do want to get your thoughts on a recent article with Men's Health, which featured Greg Norman, where he likened the perfect golf shot to having an orgasm, describing the sensation as an absolute rush. The rotation of your body, the timing, the feel, the sound, the end result, the visual side of the ball taking off from the club face. I can keep going. It's just such a sensual feeling, he said, end quotes.
Yeah.
Is there an equivalent feeling in cricket, like when... For example, when you hit that ramp shot a few weeks ago off Michael Nisa.
I was actually, yeah.
Or is Greg Norman just in some fucking weird areas?
Oh, he's in weird areas, yeah, definitely. I think he always has been from what I can see. But
that ramp shot.
Yeah, the perfectly executed ramp shot's the best feeling in cricket by far. Especially when you don't practice it ever. You've never played one in your life. And the only one before that you ever played went straight to a short 45. To try and visualise it happening and then hit it for six. I can probably see where Shark's coming from there.
Zabs, whereabouts is this game being played? Are you in a prison?
Sounds like there's a drug deal going on in the car park, mate.
Basically, it's in Adelaide, so yeah. pretty much.
It's just a...
I was keen, since you've had a couple of good series for Australia that we've just spoken about there, and we've watched your leg spin bowling and enjoyed it, and we know that, you know, bowling leg spin might appear in the next edition of the DSM, but can you tell us about the wild ride of leg spin bowling, Zorba? Like, what does it mean to belong to the brotherhood of leg spin? Like, who is welcome, who isn't? What are the terms of engagement, you know, in this brotherhood?
I could probably go back maybe 7 or 8 years to when I was welcomed into the brotherhood. I don't know. He's probably one of the great cricketer favourites, but if you have ever heard any stories about Greg Matthews, they're probably pretty rare. And I don't know if I can talk about this on a podcast or on radio, but he tried to welcome me into the brotherhood with open arms.
Was he wearing clothes at the time when he did that?
I had to ask him to put them back on. Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously a euphemism for him to welcome you with open arms. Was there any specific way he welcomed you, or an initiation of sorts that you could share with the listeners?
I think it was just a random like visit into the change rooms after. It was after probably my first season. Yeah, he's actually done it quite a few times to spinners. He just tries to come into the change rooms after the games and surprise them with a cheeky little visit.
Zaps, I got a text message.
I can't go further into it.
This is because I mean, the imagination is running wild about what a cheeky little visit means.
Yeah.
Zaps, I got a text message this morning from a couple of my friends in the UK who I used to play cricket with, and they told me that in 2015 you were playing for East Moseley against my old club Farnham. You were given out after kicking one to second slip before calling out to the umpire when you're walking off the field, "You've ruined the game," and then throwing your bat in the bin. First of all, can you confirm this story? And second of all, thoughts?
I think, four years on, I probably don't know if I'd have that same reaction. The bat would definitely go in the bin, but I'd probably just...
Well, there's no bins in cricket fields anymore because of terrorism threats.
The only thing that I don't believe about that story is that I got hit in front of the stumps because I'm usually standing a long way towards where square leg. There's absolutely no way I'm getting them behind a meeting against Farnham Creek Club.
Zamps, it's been described as the greatest existential threat to our generation, and policymakers are dragging their heels when it comes to creating meaningful change that could help prevent a devastatingly bleak future for generations. So now that we know all this, should I say, why did you decide to play in the 100 tournament?
Are you a traditionalist? Boys traditionalists?
Well, I'm just concerned about future generations.
I'm concerned about... Well, the way that I see it is that T20 cricket's actually way too long now.
Yep.
So,
agreed.
If you're... Yeah, like, 20 overs is just... I think after about 10, it starts to drag on. So if you can get an innings done within 60 minutes and then have a five-minute changeover and then you're back out there and back on the train, back to Shoreditch straight away, then you're laughing. You get paid the same as well.
Shoreditch was cool about 3 years ago, wasn't it?
What's that?
Nothing.
No. just hipster wars. Zorba, you know, speaking of hipster stuff, like you're a solid meme artist in your own right, you know, on Instagram, and your Instagram reveals a number of references or homages to one Stuart McGill. Can you just give us an insight into what SCG McGill means to you and the esteem in which you hold the man?
I've actually, same as when I was talking about Greg Matthews, he was one of the ones that welcomed me into the brotherhood. I did quite a bit of work with McGill. When I was about 20, 21 years old, and then I sent him a text without really, I obviously had spent a bit of time with him. I probably looked at him as a bit of a mentor and a friend, and I sent him a text saying, "Hey, mate, I'm moving to South Australia." And then he sent me a text back saying, "Nah, I can't really say it on the radio either." But it was yeah, he wasn't happy with me. So, but to be fair, McGill has been a big on a serious note. He's been a big fan of mine even since then. So, I do like McGill. I just think he's a bit of a I don't know, what do you call it, just an icon. Paul had to play behind more his whole career.
I was actually up in Byron a few weeks ago, and I'm pretty sure I spotted you enjoying brunch at Bayleaf. What's a perfect day in Byron for you?
Perfect day in Byron Bay. Harrat, what do you reckon? Perfect day in Byron Bay. Yeah. Go to Lighthouse Walk.
At sunset?
Yeah. Definitely Lighthouse Walk, and then we go to Bayleaf because they have a great coffee. And then Watergoes Beach.
Watergoes Beach, yeah.
It's probably the best. Watergoes Beach is the best beach. Afternoon at Ray's on Watergoes, which is a little boutique hotel. And they have, yeah, stone and wood. And then if you have time, then you go over to the industrial estate and do some vintage shopping. And then over night time, where do we go for dinner in Byron? Oh, no.
You've been Harvest?
Do you want to put Hat Rat on?
No, we go and play barefoot bowls at the bowling club. Nice. And have a stone and wood.
Beautiful. Nice. And stream Shield. That's on your phone.
Day.
This cast is sponsored by Byron Bay Tourism. Just finally, Zorba, we love chatting to you because, you know, I feel like there's just been a general embrace of, like, things that are alternate in Australian cricket, a bit of a woke revolution, you know, there's more veganism, there's more rare units, you know. Like, as someone on the inside of Australian cricket, can you give us an insight into whether it's true and, like, rare units are on the rise in Australian cricket, especially in the professional ranks?
Professional ranks, yeah. Well, I sit here right now and I look out at the Darren Lehman Academy. They're walking back out there now, playing against the Redbacks second 11. And I can see Cam Valente. He plays a few one days and a little bit of Shield cricket for South Australia. He's one of those rare units on the rise. But it's still pretty scarce, I guess. I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of people just trying to tick the boxes and be pretty normal and just be. Be who they think's meant to be, you know, a cricketer. But I still think the rare units are quite scarce, mate.
Okay, so there's still a
few more out there, a few more mullets, or I don't know, just a bit more. We just need a bit more.
Do you have a message maybe for any aspiring cricketers out there around embracing their rare unitism? You know, you play for Australia, you're prepared to be yourself, not necessarily tick the boxes, go to the beat of your own drummer. What would you say to aspiring cricketers out there who want to be rare units?
I do have a message, I just want them to think about me before they go to bed and have their I guess me just whispering in their ear saying, get rarer.
Don't get complacent. I'd like them
Don't get complacent, get rarer.
On that note, Zorba, it's always a pleasure having you on the Great Cricketer Podcast. Good luck in your second 11 game against Darren Lehman's academy. And just, I guess, thanks, for everyone out there, stay rare.
Cheers, mate. Get rarer.
He's one of Yorkshire's favourite sons. Wikipedia says his name is Brez Big Time or Brezzy Lad. It's Tim Bresnan. Welcome to the Great Cricketer.
We need therapy, Brez. We need a team of doctors to work with us, each of us, each individual. And because we've had psychological trauma inflicted upon us. I mean, if you were us, how would you be feeling?
I think what I'd do is, as a matter of urgency, I'd set up a care centre. I'd call it the Joel Wilson Institute.
Okay, the Ordinary Rig 11 campaign is done. We were calling them Great Australian Rigs. We have the submissions compiled. We are going to be announcing what those rigs are. There was a lot of great ones in the last week or so as well. A lot of people said that Marcus North had a wonderful face. People generally liked Mitchell Starc and Adam Gilchrist's length and angularity.
Marcus North has the kindest eyes that I've ever seen.
Someone suggested Jordan Silk's neck.
Yes.
That's pretty good.
Correct. So all of these may well make it into the Great Australian Rig Castle Smugglers that we'll be releasing in Very Normal Stuff. What we want to talk about is the next campaign for Budgie Smuggler, which is what they're calling My Smuggling Remake. So what we're asking people to do is to submit in their Budgie Smugglers, wearing your Budgie Smugglers, famous, let's say, internet moments,
right,
or any moment, really, that should be remade. Mm-hmm. So, for example, we've got people standing there, smugglers, impersonating Kim Kardashian throwing that champagne onto her glute region, let's say, for example. Do you guys have any other examples of moments that should be remade with people wearing their smugglers?
One came top of my head was like Mark Latham's handshake with John Howard.
Yep.
Just want to see that just in grill. Quite hard to find that on the internet, but there is a snip on YouTube. You can find that. Just really, really getting up in his grill.
Just in Smugglers.
Old, in Smugglers, in his old man's grill. Yeah.
This is probably pre-internet, but I reckon just Bradman. When Bradman was practicing his batting with a golf ball and a stump against, you know, a fucking water tank stand or whatever it was. I'd like to see someone recreate that. It might be one of those moving iPhone live photos that you have to take on the new iPhone, just so you can get the kind of grainy kind of movement, maybe in sepia form.
Good call.
Does that qualify?
Yeah, no, that would absolutely
qualify. I'm thinking as well, you'd have to do Michael Bevan's four off the last ball against West Indies, the SCG, and just the speed at which he got his helmet off before he completed the run to celebrate arms aloft.
Speaking of arms aloft, maybe like the one where Shane Watson was flexing on the Lord's balcony.
True.
You'd have to go and you'd have to go on a tour of Lord's. You have to get a mate on the other side of the oval with like a long lens camera taking a photo of you flexing like Shane Watson. Doable.
Yep.
Very doable.
Very doable.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Okay, so the way you participate in the My Smuggling Remake competition is just simply get online, take that picture in your smugglers, and hashtag it My Smuggling Remake. Just another note as well, if you want to put in for some custom Budgie Smugglers for your club and get that discount, then I think that's orders over 20. Is that right? It's either 11 or 20. That has to be done by November 19. We're recording this on November 11. November 19, so it's done in time for Christmas. So if you want to get that going, get going.
Get going.
BudgieSmuggler.com.au.
All right, it's hashtag AskTJC. One that will speak to Zamps as ever. Zorba.
If you will.
Close personal friend. All right, we've got a couple of live shows coming up, lads. We're in Brisbane next Thursday. After the night of the first test match, we're going to be at the Princess Theatre. Night of the first test match, we're going to be there with Jason Gillespie, the three of us on stage. Are you looking forward to that?
Very much so.
Dave?
Absolutely. He was wonderful in London.
He was funny.
He was a wonderful guest star London show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's going to be good. That's going to be a good night out that Thursday night, rolling to probably a little bit late to work on Friday. Yeah. The following week, we're in Adelaide at the Rhino Room. Pez, that's just you and I. We're just doing that show. We're there, however, with Sean Tate, which is also a wonderful get.
We did seek Ryan Rhino Harris's involvement as well, just purely for the synchronicity with the name of the room.
Yeah.
To go along with Sean. But we do have the wild thing.
That's right. That's going to be good. That's going to be good. That's a Saturday of the Adelaide Test match. That's a lunchtime kickoff. That is going to be, as I've said many times before, the biggest day of your life. Get around it. GreatCricketer.club for all your ticketing needs. Obviously, the show's in Melbourne and Sydney as well, but Brisbane and Adelaide on the horizon. Pez, we've also got the first episode of our Channel 7 show coming up this Friday. It's a big week.
There's a lot of conjecture. A lot of conjecture through the winter over whether Channel 7 would indeed re-sign us after, or whether we would even go with them, you know, after the wild success of our Twitter show with them last year that competed favourably with Totally Wild on Channel 10. And it transpires that, yes, we will be going around again with Channel 7.
Just you two guys, though, I won't be involved in it. Part of the deal with Seven was that you had to get rid of some of the baggage.
Had to get rid.
So I've actually been removed from the contract. So it will just be you two guys. So have fun.
Had to get rid, yeah. It's weird how like Channel 7 have done a lot of promos of like celebrating who's in their lineup this year. Obviously, Copes.
Yeah.
You know, Bruce.
It was great to actually see that just take place on social media. Yeah. A couple of pictures from Melbourne. We're sitting around the corner going, didn't learn about that.
Yeah. We were in the break room
At
7 there. Anyway, so that's this Friday. But you can obviously check out our social media as ever, because we'll obviously just be plugging that so you can find it through there.
There may be some favourable broadcasting times for that as well. We're not sure yet, but it may be taking place on a normal TV at some point too.
You might be able to watch it into the Big Bash, both WBBL and BBL. All right.
Hashtag AskTGC, ready to go?
Yeah, okay.
Jack Dobo, hi AskTGC. I recently scored my maiden grade century after a full 16 seasons of faking it as a batsman in second grade and bowling mostly junk time leg spin that everyone in my club hated. It came a few weeks after finding out I'm going to be a dad early next year. Is it mere luck or is there something in this? Is it A, that I'm batting on borrowed time with the impending arrival and my wife would love me infinitely more if I never played again post-birth? Or B, more the fact that second grade these days is more like fourths and the standard of Australian grade cricket is atrocious, like all the old life members back at the club sponsor say each Saturday night, and I'm just the same hack I've always been. Regards, Dobbo.
Thanks, Dobbo. Well, of course, it's a and Dave knows this, it's a proven social phenomenon that players find new perspective after a child arrives. You know, you realise the sport doesn't really matter. Paradoxically, that calmness translates to performance. However, this is a bit different. This is the imminent arrival of a child, and Dobbo is suggesting that subconsciously he's stockpiling great performances because he may soon have to quit, which I find intriguing, frankly.
Is that like when people say, oh, stock up on sleep before the baby comes? Yeah. As if you can actually stockpile sleep.
I'm glad I did back then too, because I
feel really well rested now. Yeah.
I find this logic intriguing because many cricketers have told themselves this is going to be their last season. Uh-huh. Before a lot of cricketers haven't had children or don't have an imminent child coming, but a lot of them have said, "Oh no, this is my last season." Much like Dobbo is saying, I've never seen that translate to superior performance. In fact, I see a marked decline in performance, and then it's usually met with the seven stages of grieving, et cetera, et cetera. You start to convince yourself that actually next season you're going to eclipse all your records and get better, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. That never happens. In fact, you have a declining body and eyesight, increased pressure at work and home, not changing your game preparation one iota. So in conclusion, I say it's probably luck and the fact that second grade is fucking fourth grade.
Well, I definitely think that his wife will infinitely love him more if he does resign from cricket.
Yeah, that I agree with.
Because you're not an international cricketer. You derive no income from cricket. Mm-hmm. And the first year of being a parent is really all just about performing chores. So you do need to be around the house. You'll be buying all the shopping. You'll be doing the dishes, hanging out the washing. You'll be performing back massages on cue, getting up in the middle of the night to help out with feeding. Mm-hmm. You can't do that and then go play Saturday and Sunday at fucking 50 Ks west of the airport out at Raby or wherever it is. And expect to be, you know, come home and be, you know, respected as a husband and father.
Not in 2019, you can't. With the demolishing of the nuclear family, and rightly so.
I feel like a lot of expectant fathers might have listened to Dave's message there and think, I might actually just keep playing. It doesn't sound that good.
Well, divorce rate is now over 50%, I think, in Australia.
Makes sense. Mm.
And then what about the remaining couples who are together? How happy are they in those relationships?
But hit that one perfect cover drive.
Yeah, I don't know. Guys who still play cricket with a literal newborn.
And not just that, but like the guys that... some people are like able to juggle it. Yeah, good setup at the crease. Yeah.
Back and across, is that what you mean?
Yep.
Okay, Ryan Osborne writes in, "Hello, various champs. I have a query. My long-time mate and I are playing in a second 11 match against each other tomorrow and live in the same suburb. What is the etiquette on carpooling to the game? Is that a no-no? I just want to hear from the fellas that know it all. Cheers." This match has obviously been played.
Yeah, I can't remember when this was sent in. Might have been a few weeks ago. But
well, the fact that you are friends with an opposition player obviously affords you social capital within your own team environment, in the sense that you can give intel on the opposition. Mm-hmm. And particularly when you're, you know, in mid-wicket huddle after a wicket has taken place, you can say, oh, this bloke does this, or, you know, I actually know this. He's actually a really good bloke, this guy that's coming in.
Yeah.
So you can, intel is important, but actually turning up to the ground with this opposition player, would you advise that?
I haven't seen it before, but I think I quite like it. The only thing I would advise against is if these two guys are like batters and bowlers, so they could actually compete against each other.
Right.
But as we know, cricket is an individual game masquerading as a team sport.
Yes.
So like if they're two batsmen, well, their paths will never cross, apart from, you know, one guy mid-off, so it doesn't matter. Really doesn't matter. You could probably take one kit. You could share a box.
Well, certainly in terms of like offsetting carbon emissions, I think sharing any kind of ride to a cricket ground, I would strongly recommend that.
What does Greta say?
Riding hog.
If this is second 11, like second 11, as they say, second XR, which is a weird way of writing it, if this is grade, I think it's disgusting.
Oh, you're not having it?
I think it's absolutely disgusting. I can't think of anything that would make me feel more sick. Anything.
Why?
If you're more sick, I'll explain.
Okay.
Than seeing a teammate get out of their car in the morning, like of a game, and I'm in some fucking suburban outpost, and they get out of the car yahooing and laughing with a member of the opposition side clutching McDonald's bags and their thick shake.
Oh, so they've also gone to McDonald's before the game. Let's go the whole hog.
They're laughing. They might have circuited last night, and they're having a laugh. Like, there's one rule for playing with and against friends in cricket that you know better than perhaps your own teammates, and that is to deal with them awkwardly, as though you're not sure if you know them, you don't know how to deal with them, and to generally just be a repressed male.
Well, just the general dehumanization of the opposition is important in sport. You have to treat them like the other. You know, it's like Orientalism. Edward Said.
It's the same thing.
I think it's disgusting.
See, I wonder, Pez, if you looking at that makes you feel like you're not elite, because like the international players don't turn up together.
Correct.
So maybe you're actually projecting your fears of just like, well, I'm actually, it's like when you get asked to do the sight screens, it's like, well, the test players don't have to fucking do that. Why should I have to score?
Yeah.
Why should I have to go umpire, get drinks sorted? The pros don't do that. Someone does that for them.
Exactly.
Yeah? Nothing makes you feel more amateur than like carrying a wet Hessian on a Saturday morning.
Correct.
Mitchell Casey. G'day, lads. Whilst my team was fielding during our game on the weekend, I witnessed one of the most unbelievable dismissals in cricket history. They had a new batsman in who was starting at the non-striker's end, and after the striker had tucked one around the corner to find leg, the non-striker called the striker through for what should have been an easy single. About halfway through the run, the new batsman somehow managed to clip his pad with his bat before going on to trip over his bat and fall to a halt in the middle of the pitch. In his infinite wisdom, he decided to turn around and travel back a few metres to collect his bat before going on to attempt to complete the run.
Nice.
He was eventually run out by about a quarter of the pitch for a diamond duck with no one but himself to blame. I'm wondering what kind of bizarre dismissals you guys saw in your cricket careers. Were there any more day-ruining dismissals than this one?
Every dismissal is a day-ruiner in the amateur realm. There's obviously the obvious ones are when like the bowler gets nick on the follow through when the ball rolls down to the non-striker stumps and stuff. I remember getting out once, run out by not sliding my bat. Instead, I was completing a second run, running to the bowler's end, not even my runs, and I like didn't slide my bat or put my bat down. I like went to just step in, and it was fucking village. It was like one of my first second grade games. It would have been maybe 19, 20, something like that, and it was just. I still think about it. It was the most embarrassing, village, pathetic way to get out.
Deep breath,
man.
I need to play cricket again because I've forgotten everything.
Yeah.
You actually never got out.
I never got out. I never dropped a catch. I never got out.
Yeah. I once, speaking of like day ruiners, I once nicked one in under 11s against Monash.
Oh, that's hard.
Monash. Yeah. I really wanted to. I really wanted to score runs that day.
You always hit runs against Holy Family, didn't you?
Correct. And I once nicked one, caught behind. They were all yahooing. I got two, and I claimed then that I didn't hit it. And I definitely hit it. And as I walked off the field at Blackburn Park, I threw my bat on the ground, dewy ground, and then kicked it all the way off. I still remember the bat sliding along the ground as I kicked it off. And then I looked up and... a lot of people were standing there facing me as I threw this tantrum, and my dad was in the middle, who was our coach, and he said, "We all heard it, mate." Which, as a father now, I realise was that, like, in context, it was an important lesson. At the time, I did not heed it. I took my gear off and sat in the car for hours until my then best friend came in and sat with me and implored me to come out, and I didn't. I mean, that ruined my day.
A day ruiner is when the opposition is yahooing out of disbelief or just so incongruous that you've got out the way that you have and they're just hooting and hollering and yous and woos and all these
laughing.
It's the fear of hearing of laughter when you've got out. Just like you've just made someone else's day that they're going to be telling stories about back at the clubhouse afterwards. They'll remember this day for years and you will never be able to forget your darkest
And when the game
moment.
Is over and you're shaking hands, you can see this perceptible smile creep across
bad luck face.
bad luck, mate. That's good.
Bad luck, mate.
That's good.
Yeah. You're all faceless fucking no ones, but you are a member.
That I love that juxtaposition between like the niceness on the face of opposition as you shake hands. And you think, all of the previous sledging is actually eroded now and we're just friends. Mm. And as soon as they pass you, you're walking out onto the ground. They're walking back because they've just won.
Yeah.
And as soon as they hit the dressing room with the acoustics, you can hear the, yow!
And then with perfect synchronicity, the bass drum of the Sulo bin starts. And it's...
Yeah. While you sit in the dressing room, heads bowed, everyone pretending they're disappointed, instead just thinking, where am I going out tonight?
Yeah. And then someone says, shit song.
Yeah.
Doesn't even have a melody.
It's a shit song. Kelly O'Tom. Dear RTDC, last one this week. He says, a couple of seasons ago when I was still a ton virgin, luckily last summer I managed to grab consecutive Saturday tons, albeit in the Yuck Division 3 Village League that I like to think I'm better than, but my stats would suggest otherwise. In the latter of the two, I was dropped four times. I was playing a 70-over Sunday friendly, a code reserved predominantly for old blokes in full button-down shirts and old suntan Duncan Fernley sticks. So I've just lost my place here because my notes app's closed. Bear with me. Duncan Fernley sticks. When I got into a bit of a knock in the middle of an old village ground, bouncy track with a tiny boundary. Feeling like a young Andrew Simons, I started to dominate the feeble bowling and race towards three-figure immortality. On the penultimate ball of the penultimate over, I hit a single off my legs to see the crowd about 12 people leap to their feet and call out the hallowed words of battered mate and good knock, son. I lifted my cap and kissed the badge and held my bat aloft. I was there, the promised land. Finally, my father could be proud. He wasn't there, of course. The next ball, the bloke at the other end was out, bringing to the crease a number 11, someone's young son who hadn't played before, who had been patiently waiting with his pads on for his first knock of men's cricket. The first ball of the last over, I prodded the ball straight to mid-off and saw the nipper running down the wicket. Knowing that I had reached the pinnacle of my cricketing career, I duly accepted his call and was run out of the bowler's end, allowing the youngster to get a taste of men's cricket. Strolling back to the pavilion, I felt a sense of pride for my achievement and also for my selfless act of falling on my sword for the next generation. It was only when I joined my friends on the boundary rope when I was told that the scorer got it wrong and that I had in fact been dismissed for 98. As my mates laughed, I wanted to cry. What a stupid fucking sport. My question is this. Does my ton count? People clapped. I punched the air. The feeling was so real. Mm. Is there such a thing as a moral 100? Thoughts? Much love. Does it count?
Well, there's no substitute for the elation that you felt in that exact moment, is there? There's obviously also no excuse for your naivety. I mean, I know whenever I got out a few times on 49 or whatever it was, 98 once actually. But whenever I was approaching a milestone, then I achieved it, I always made sure to hit a few runs afterwards. Right. Just a couple of little singles down, because you knew. Because scoring is such an unsophisticated form of data entry, isn't it?
Yeah. It's awesome.
And, you know, you've got blokes, there's a changeover between scorers, so you're basically relying on your teammates to collect the score, and then when there's a bit of conversation going, maybe you don't have good chemistry with the other team's scorer. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be, you know, a few runs in and out. So I think what he should learn from this is that just next time you do get a 50 or 100, just make sure you get a few more. Just make sure of it.
I remember... it was a second grade game. One of the guys in the team, my team, was on. He scored 99. He had driven our scorer to the ground that day. It was the year of Gordon's centenary dinner. So there was a big event happening that Saturday night.
Nice.
He scored his 100. Bat celebrated. We all clapped. Come back in. Realised he'd actually been declared on or dismissed for 99. Mm. The guy who got the 99 then accidentally left the scorer at the ground whilst he had left early to go and participate in the Gordon centenary dinner, therefore leaving the scorer completely abandoned by himself without a lift home. So,
retribution. He's still there.
He's still, he died.
He lives in the stadium now.
Yeah. I would suggest that like what Kelly O'Tom should have done is to absolutely scold the young batsman and give him a proper taste of men's cricket, saying, how fucking dare you take this away from me?
There should be repercussions on the scorer. How come the scorer gets away scot-free?
Good point.
With this? I mean, he loses his 100. What, the scorer doesn't lose anything. Oh, sorry, mate. Fucked up. No repercussions. Should be blacklisted from scoring.
I actually think that, identity politics is normally pretty good if you just have the language and maturity to deal with it. I think that, like, the term political correctness is actually an insidious propaganda tool used by the right wing. Usually it just means you're sensitive with language. It's not really a big deal to be politically correct. Though moral 100 sounds fucking overly political correct. I'd like to rather just be black and white about it. You didn't get 100.
Yeah.
The feeling, the elation that you had is invalid.
It was wrong.
Mm. Yep.
He was wrong to feel that.
Yeah. There were plenty more balls for the kid to get on strike. You should have just hit one into the gap.
Mm.
And you should definitely feel regret.
Is it a little bit like... Is it like, you know, Hillary Clinton getting 2 million more votes in the US presidential election? Although, if you look at the actual electoral college results, didn't win.
Yeah.
Moral victory. Fuck off with your moral victory, Hillary. And check your emails.
Isn't Kelly's problem now that, like, anytime he scores 100 again, he'll always be like, did I really get it? He'll be brought back to this day. So now even success for him will now resonate with failure and the painful, painful memories of that one day of getting 98. That's the Great Cricketer podcast this week. Thanks to Adam Zampa for joining the show for the second time. The Great Cricketer on 7 starting this week. Live shows in Adelaide and Brisbane coming up. GreatCricketer.club for all your tickets. We'll see you there. Cheers.